Hi, welcome to Brew. I'm Lisa.
I'm Liza.
And I'm Jonathan.
And we're here today to talk about the Double Diamond, which is part of design thinking, which is also part of the wider business service design. So if you've not heard of the Double Diamond before, it's a really useful technique, and it's to allow you to think about a problem or opportunity, and also the solution or possible solution to that problem or opportunity. So we look at divergent and convergent thinking in both the different diamonds. Jonathan, would you mind just giving us a bit of an overview about the divergent and convergent aspects of that?
Yeah. So happy to explain divergent and convergent thinking. So the one way to think about it is it's the opposite of linear thinking. So linear thinking is where you have an identified problem or opportunity and you in a straight line choose the solution. And I think the hope is that that solution works and is the right solution. Sometimes it is. It's not always the wrong thing to do in terms of linear thinking. On a certain context, you might use it. But let's have a look at what is divergent thinking then. So we've got to have some prerequisites in order to do divergent thinking. So we need a foundation of trust and collaboration in the team. And ideally, that team will be made up of different types of individuals with different backgrounds, different viewpoints, different levels of experience and expertise. So what we're going to do is we're going to spread our net as wide as possible initially in terms of capturing as many ideas that we can with regard to either the problem or the solution. So we repeat divergent thinking in both the problem and the solution space. And it's about thinking about things differently, being creative, challenging each other's assumptions, reversing assumptions, looking at the data to try and identify what are all the possible angles on either this problem or opportunity to make sure we've not missed anything. So it's quite fun. You've got to be careful you don't spend too long on divergent thinking, because a lot of people get really involved in using techniques like crazy eights and assumption reversal. One of my favorites, and it's my colleague Mike Williams, who's on the pod quite often, he likes to do this thing on divergent thinking where you make the problem worse. You make the problem worse before you then come up with ideas as to how to make it better. And I love using that technique. And my favorite thing, and this again comes from Mike in terms of he shared it with me, you look at the problem or opportunity solution from a different angle, and you could choose a TV, a personality, film character, a politician, or someone from history to look at. Well, let's think about this problem from a different angle. My favorite one to use is Donkey from Shrek. How would Donkey from Shrek consider this problem or solution? What idea would they come up with? And if you compare that to then comparing, right, how would a politician tackle that, or how would a business leader tackle it, you start to get a broader pool of ideas. So that's divergent thinking. Convergent thinking is the complete opposite. And for convergent thinking, you're evaluating the ideas, you're testing feasibility. I'd often be thinking about what's the risks and impacts, costs and benefits of a proposal, and does it align with our culture and our strategy in the organization relative to whatever context that we're using. So there's quite a lot in convergent thinking, but we're evaluating the idea or either the problem or solution, and we're deciding what ways we're going to move forward. Lisa, did that make sense? That was quite a long explanation.
Yeah, sure. So you kind of, so first of all, you sort of, for divergent, you're going outwards, lots of ideas, really widen that net. And then for convergent, you're going back in, sort of trying to narrow that back down again. Okay, no, that's really interesting, really interesting. So you've used it then, you both used it, in fact. So Liza, you've used it quite a few times, I think, in your work. Could you tell us a little bit, how have you used it? Have you used it on an individual basis, perhaps as part of a team? I'm just interested to know how it plays out in real life, really.
Yeah, and Lisa, we've done it both, like as a silent brainstorming, like individually doing divergent thinking, and then coming back to the group to look at all the ideas and do a proper group and collaborative brainstorming. So it has been effective. Like the double diamond, I guess visually, if you can imagine, it's two diamonds. So that shape itself represents the cyclical nature of design thinking. To Jonathan's point, it's not linear. So it's really iterative. And it opens up, it encourages teams to explore a wide range of possibilities and user needs. And then that's in divergent phase. And then in convergent, the focus shifts towards refining and selecting the most promising problems, opportunities, or solutions. And I remember this case study, like real life application of design thinking, such an amazing example. About a kids' shampoo company trying to outperform their competition. So who buys the shampoo? Of course, the parents, right? So they focus on features that appeal to them, like organic ingredients or eco-friendly packaging. Now, this is where the double diamond comes in. So this kids' shampoo company adopted the framework, and this is what they found. So in the first diamond, what Jonathan has shared, like in the discover and define phase, where you identify the problem. So this company, through user research, surveys, interviews, and even observing bath time routines, they discover that the real struggle is actually in the kids themselves. Kids hate taking a bath. So based on these insights, the company has redefined the problem.
Excellent. No, it's a really good example, and it's interesting, isn't it? Because I suppose it kind of addresses the aspect that you've got to try and sell it to the parents and the child, haven't you? You've got like two, it's like a two-pronged attack there, haven't you? So it's a really interesting example.
Exactly, Lisa. And actually in convergent thinking and in the solution phase, their focus shifts to solutions to address the kids' needs. So the shampoo that actually they designed has a fun dispenser shaped like their favorite animal, makes silly, squeaky sounds. So this double diamond really allowed the company to test their ideas with real kids, iterate further based on feedback. So really effective tool.
Brilliant. I've not even thought about the aspects of getting like sort of the users to test to test it using the double diamond. That's really good way of using it. Yeah. How about yourself, Jonathan? How have you used it? I mean, obviously you teach about the design thinking and all that, all that good stuff.
Yeah. And I think that getting the customer or user involved in testing the prototype is really key, because what it does is it makes sure that you're confident you've got a practical solution or potential solution to the problem or opportunity that you started with. And it's based on research. It's not someone's assumption that this thing's going to work. It's not an assumption that a shampoo bottle in the shape of a tiger is going to land well with the children. They've actually got feedback from children as to whether or not that solution is viable, feasible, desirable. It's kind of, you can then move forward with confidence relative to whatever it is that you've put forward as a solution. But back to your question in terms of use, I think there's different levels that you can use the double diamond on. And there's a level where you would use the double diamond for a major project in an organization, and you would need, I would suggest, some sponsorship for the approach. If you haven't got a sponsor that is open to non-linear thinking, this divergent and convergent thinking, it'll be really quite difficult. But you can use it as an approach to understand problems and identify possible solutions within a project context inside an organization. And that does work, but is a different way to using it relative to using it on a small level, which I'd suggest we can all do. And that is that we can think in double diamond ways. So there's no one that can tell you how to think or not to think. You choose. But when I'm presented with a problem, I like to test and to use the double diamond a lot, even in everyday life, looking at a problem and trying to discuss with colleagues, friends, family, what are the different angles on this problem and how might we better understand it? What other ways might we think about what is or isn't the problem? And then thinking about solutions, let's make sure that we've not just jumped at the first solution. Are there other ways that we could tackle this? And I think you've got to have a relationship of trust and openness, and you don't have to start sharing with your friends the double diamond approach necessarily. But if you are trying to problem solve with your friends and family, not jumping to the first solution that comes to mind might be really useful so that you get a better solution for everyone. So I used it just this morning at work. We were looking at, and we take this stuff really seriously at Assist, we're rolling out service design training to every team member within our company. We think it's that important. And we're looking at a problem, identified a problem with a team member in our social media marketing area. And it was to do with photographs relative to industry events that we appear at and take part in. And what we did was we looked at the problem, we looked at it from a few different angles, and what we've done is we've created different prototypes of potential photographs that we might use going forward. And there's that trust that we can do that. It's bringing together different team members' skill sets and interests. And I'm not, you could disagree or agree that the end photograph that we're going to end up using for going forward is good or bad. But we've got a different way of thinking about things just relative to a photograph, because we've taken the time to understand and analyze it from different angles and try and come up with prototypes for how we might move things forward. So you can use it on a really small scale for a really small problem like a photograph, versus you can use it on quite a big scale for a big project inside an organization. So there's a very different context of use.
That's a fantastic tool, isn't it? And there's so many applications I wouldn't have even thought of there. My initial one was like you were saying, using it as an individual for, like, we've all got problems, haven't we? Be it at work or, you know, there's always something to, you know, there's always some challenge you've got to address, isn't there? So actually using that in your mind as you're going through it is a great idea. But also, yeah, like I say, on the wider scale, it's really exciting. Yeah, really good. So
there's an example, Lisa. Can I jump in with an example? So, and I think Liza, you might have mentioned this in the pre-pod. There was a train company looking at journey times between two destinations, and the cost to upgrade the line was something like $300-400 million. I've probably got the numbers wrong. And they were trying to reduce it from, say, 40 minutes to 35 minutes, and it cost $300 million. And what they did was they looked at that problem, and instead what they did was they looked at the Wi-Fi on the train. And so they didn't, and that cost like $2 million to upgrade the Wi-Fi. And what it was the use of the time and making sure that people could use their time effectively whilst on the train saved a lot of money, and you've got very happy customers. But it's based on research as to, well, what do customers actually want? What is the problem? Is it that this journey time is the problem, or is it that I'm not able to use my time effectively? And you start to then think about different solutions that wouldn't have otherwise been possible unless you'd done that divergent thinking on the problem. Liza, you had a great example with regard to a lift, just the time that you're spending in a lift. Yeah,
that's right. And I love what you pointed out there, Jonathan, that the design thinking and the double diamond really is a powerful tool to validate assumptions, you know, your initial assumptions about who your users are, the user needs and the requirements may not be accurate. And to your point, it's now grounded in real insights because you apply the divergent and convergent thinking. And also it identifies hidden issues because you use empathy a lot in this whole process. So you uncover those underlying problems or opportunities that might not have surfaced or were apparent in the initial problem definition. So really useful every day. Doesn't have to be in a major project like that 300 or 400 million train upgrade, but also, like what Jonathan said, every day, just recalibrating, validating your assumptions, your understanding of what the users feel and think.
That's brilliant. I think as well, just the whole idea generation thing, it's always nice to have a bit of a framework around that. A lot of people don't feel like they are ideas people. I think it just gives that really nice sort of straightforward framework. Like I say, it's not necessarily linear. You can iterate around it, but it's just a really nice starting point as well, isn't it, for lots of different things, as we've said. So
speaking of ideas generation, I personally love the scamper technique, which is the scamper is actually an acronym for substitute, combine, adapt, modify, repurpose, eliminate, and reverse. So, you know, it prompts you to think about these areas, like what do you want to substitute from that process, or can you combine process steps, or can you combine solutions together? So these are really good prompts to generate a wide range of ideas and explore as many solutions as possible. So you're right there, Lisa.
No, it's a great example. Absolutely. So in terms of, I mean, does this technique have its limitations? Are there challenges with it that we've said about the really positive side of it? Have you come across any sort of challenges or limitations in using it at all?
Mm-hmm. Do you want me to go for that one, Lisa?
Yes, please. Yeah. Thank you.
So I think you need sponsorship to use it if you're going to be using it on a big project, as I mentioned earlier. You can't do it on your own. You can't do design thinking on your own. You need team members that understand the approach and are bought into it. They've got to be open and transparent, willing to have each other's views challenged and their assumptions questioned and tested to look at things from different angles. So if you try to use design thinking in a context where you think you know the answer, I'd suggest that might not be a good appropriate use of design thinking, because what design thinking and the double diamond is going to do in terms of an approach is going to allow you to look at different views of the problem, opportunity and potential solutions. So if you're very fixated on a solution and you're not willing to have that solution challenged, it's going to be really problematic, almost impossible to get the benefit of use of design thinking and the double diamond. So we've got to put aside our ego and have humility in the using of this approach, because we're sort of saying to ourselves, we don't know, we're not 100% certain what the problem is, and we certainly don't know what the solution might be to that problem. So we've got to go in with an open mind from the outset. And if we don't have that, we're going to very much lessen the potential benefit of design thinking. The other big challenge that I'm going to suggest is there for design thinking is that it doesn't tell you how to roll out your prototype. So it's not intended to do so, is my view of it. But when we've got a working prototype, it's been tested by our customers, and we've got a potential solution, what it doesn't do is tell you how to roll that out across a very large population. So let's imagine your prototype, you've tested it, it works, you've iterated, and you're happy with it. Design thinking or the double diamond doesn't tell you how to roll that out to your population of 10,000 users, for example. It doesn't solve that problem for you. You need to think about that separately and independently of the relative to your context.
No, that's a fair point. How about yourself, Lars? Have you come across any sort of limitations or?
Just echoing Jonathan's response there, you'll have to be careful, and you know, bringing stakeholders and getting their buy-in, because they could be resistant to change, especially if they already think they have the right answers, they have the right problems identified, and they have the solutions in mind already. So really spending some time to explain to them just reconfirming the problems, redefining the problems, and then making sure that we have extensively covered all the solutions. And again, to Jonathan's point, this design thinking, this double diamond, can be time consuming sometimes and resource intensive, depending on how much time you allocate to them. So my suggestion there is to time box these activities and make sure that you just pick on the high value, high impact ideas.
That's great advice. Really good advice.
Some of our challenges, just as Liza was talking, I was thinking some people see it as a linear process. So they see discover, define, develop, deliver, and they don't feel comfortable going backwards. Now, it is not linear. You can go from the prototype you're testing and realize that you've actually misunderstood the problem and go back to discovery and then redefine the problem. That takes time and it takes a team that trusts each other, that they're bought into the process and approach. But some people misconceive the double diamond as a linear cycle. There are linear phases of it. You can go backward at any point, and that's sometimes missed in the early uses of the double diamond. Is my experience, at least.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. It's really interesting, isn't it? It's a great technique, but yeah, I think I've known about the double diamond for a few years since I was on one of your courses, Jonathan. But actually, when I read back over it in preparation for this brew, I've noticed underneath it's not necessarily linear. So it's interesting to really note that and remember that you don't have to do it, exactly as it looks in the book. You know, you can sort of go between it and just use it in the way that's the most useful, really. So in terms of, obviously, we've now got business service design, which is, in my view, kind of the next big thing for business analysts, change professionals to be thinking about. It's another layer of service. And feel free to chip in and correct me on this, Jonathan, or, add to that. But I think it's another sort of skill in your tool set, your toolkit. It's another set of techniques, another set of principles, concepts. It's wonderful. How do you see the BA role in design thinking, Jonathan? Do you think do you see it in the same way as me, or what are your thoughts on that?
There's loads of views on this. That's maybe a whole pod. We could talk about this one for a long time. There's a wider angle on this in terms of business service design and design thinking. The double diamond is one tool, one approach in the broader service design discipline, I'd suggest. And that's new and it's emerging. There are different views on it. But what I'd say is that the double diamond gives structure, and what it's intended for, to promote an outcome focus. We're trying to solve problems, opportunities, and deliver outcomes for our stakeholders, typically customers and users, in a way that works for our organization and a way that works for the customer as well, the user. So it's a really powerful tool. In terms of the BA role in design thinking, using double diamond and in service design, there's lots and lots of different views on that. And what I would suggest is that we should be defining roles relative to outcomes. What are the services that are offered by a business analyst? What are the services offered by a service design professional? And I've published it in the last year, I think it was at November, in the BA Manager Forum, a service framework for service design professionals, which builds on the work that Deborah Poole and Christina Lovelock have done, Deborah Poole's PhD research into the role of the business analyst and the service framework. And then the book Delivering Business Analysis is a very clear view of what are the base services of a business analyst professional. And what we've done is we've published at the BA Manager Forum November last year the view of what are the services of a service design professional. And interesting, in doing that work, we found there's quite a lot of overlap. So both the BA and service designer are looking at situation investigation, and they're also looking at the feasibility of change business cases. So there's a huge overlap in the services that are offered, but there's also divergence in service offer. So while a service design professional is maybe doing customer experience analysis and service definition and service prototyping and service deployment, The BA is looking at change deployment requirements definition. There are different services that are offered, and I would suggest anyone looking and reading those outputs, listening to this pod, have a look at the service view, because I think it helps to answer what is the service offer of a BA versus a service designer, and that common understanding of the services they're offering helps to move forward. This discussion is my hope and intent relative to publishing those service frameworks.
Okay, lovely. So how about yourself, Liza? Have you got any thoughts on the BA role in relation to the double diamond?
To me, actually, the BAs definitely play a crucial role in this design thinking and applying the double diamond. And it could be a career pathway to become a service designer or to become user design, human-centric design pathway. So the BAs definitely play a crucial role in this whole activity. To me, the BAs bridge the gap between stakeholders and the design team, ensuring that the solutions align with the business goals and the user needs, in gathering and analyzing requirements, facilitating communication. They could define the problem clearly. And then in the ideation stage, the BAs also can contribute to testing, refining these solutions, ensuring that the final product is both feasible and valuable. So, yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us, Liza. Thank you as well, Jonathan. And thank you all for watching and listening. If you have any further ideas for future BA Brew podcasts, please do let us know on our email, which is babrew@assistkd.com. Also, if you like our content, please do like, share and subscribe. Thank you very much.